with the Ghost of Radio. Welcome back to the podcast. We're at episode 4, and we're about to reach into the cauldron, as it were, and grab another episode to listen to. So I'm ready to do that. Hope you are ready too. Let's listen. Hey, it sounds like old radio audio. What are we coming out with? It is The Devil's Workshop from Inner Sanctum. The Devil's Workshop on the Inner Sanctum. Inner Sanctum, our old frenemy, I knew you'd be coming for us sooner or later. That's the episode you need to go listen to before we join our host, Raymond and Mary, the Lipton Tea Lady, and we get into this episode. I'm not going to add any adjectives to it right now. Adjectives aplenty once we get started. So go off, listen, come back to me, your ghost of radio, and we will spill the whole ugly business together and get some enjoyment out of it. And perhaps we'll end up happy. Off you go. See you soon. Okay, we are back. And I wouldn't say that we were happy. This is not a great episode, and it's indicative, evocative, illustrative of everything that Inner Sanctum does wrong. You know, it's got a horror premise, but in the end, it is just completely undone by its own ineptitude. So we're going to be laughing our way through this one, which is what our host Raymond seems to want. Let's listen to just a tiny bit of his unbearable intro full of jokes.
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in, come in. Well, I had my musical bonnet on last night. Went looking for the lost chord, and I found it. Some joker was wearing it as a necklace. I had to cut him loose from a ceiling beam to get the cord. Oh, son. Later on, we sang sentimental songs. Everyone was so touched in the head. One gay blade got so hysterical he fell on himself, ran himself through. There he lay, dead, but no blood.
Ooh, I have to stop it there. No more of Raymond. At least, actually, this episode does not feature Mary, the Lipton Tea Lady. So we have that to be thankful for. Get right down to business. This episode is called The Devil's Workshop. It aired on October 10th, 1949 on Inner Sanctum. And you're immediately introduced to the main character, our narrator, Tony, who is super unpleasant. And you're thinking, well, you know, he's just that horrible mid-century American type of a tough guy who's a jerk, but you're supposed to like him. You're never told why. You just are supposed to like him because he's a man, you know? And I'm going to say right up front, this has a sexism fail that is so terrible but so commonplace. I don't care about ruining this plot. At some point, Tony's going to beat up on his girlfriend. Because, you know, she won't see reason. And he says it so offhandedly, like, you know, I tried talking with her and then I had to beat her up to get her to see reason. And you just realize, the more you listen to these shows, that what makes the best shows the best in horror radio is that they don't do that. Wow, there's a lot of hatred for women in all of mid-century radio, not just horror radio. What we're going to do here is call it out and say, even if this was the greatest episode ever written, it would suck because of that moment. So, cards on the table. You know, you can listen to a story. It's like knowing about somebody who did good things but was sexist or racist, prejudiced in some way, and you think, well, you know, do we still value the good things they did? It's a hard question to answer a lot of the time. In this case, there is no wonderful story to even get us to have this moral dilemma. So we're just, you know, go ahead and hate Tony. You were going to do it anyway, you know, midway through around, like minute 17. But let's just go ahead and do it right now. Here's his intro.
How did you ever fix on such a strange occupation?
Maybe because I'm strange myself. And maybe because it's my name is Murillo.
Murillo?
See that figure standing alongside the refrigeration room? The chubby little bald fellow with the face of an angel.
Mm-hmm.
He'd shot 9 men before a sheriff's posse got him. He was Cesar Murillo. My old man. Sometimes your girl Tina forgets the blood around her is make-believe and the lunatic faces of homicidal killers are only whack. Did Bloody Mary just swing at you with her axe?
No. No, not Mary. It was the devil. I could swear he moved just now. Tony, look.
What do you want me to see?
The devil grinning and moving his lips. Look, Tony, I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy. He's always grinning and moving his lips.
Always?
And moving around the room, always restless. Today's behind this killer, tomorrow that killer. Or watching Hickman the butcher. And always grinning and moving his lips like he was egging them on.
Tony, you know what you're saying?
Forget it.
Yeah, Tony works in a wax museum. A wax museum, you know, we all know immediately what we're supposed to want to have happen here. I will just say no one's going to be turned into a wax mannequin in this episode. It's not going to happen. That's not the horror in store for us. So you see that Tony is unpleasant. He laughs at his girlfriend Tina's fear. Seems kind of crazy. Why does he live in his shop? I love the line, you turn in on an iron army cot and the shop comes alive. Why are you sleeping there? Why do you live in your wax museum? I guess because he's a great guy with tons of money. That's why Tina's attracted to him. He says that the devil wax figure is always moving around. And then he reports that one day that devil figure is gone, as if he just upped and went on the town. And he accuses Tina of stealing it. Like, they're not even trying. They're not even trying with this episode. All right, so eventually, well, not even eventually, pretty quickly, we get down to brass tacks with the devil, who apparently tries to mug him on a dark street one night.
You Tony Murillo? Yes. Where's your workshop? 2 doors down. I came to you because of your genius with your hands.
You want a figure?
No. Just a face. A face for me. You see, I have no face. I mean, no adequate one.
You don't have to explain yourself. You are the devil.
In the workshop, the eyes gleaming from holes in a hood turned on me.
Sit down while I unmask.
Sit down?
It may be a shock. I'm not pretty.
Every day I see things here not pretty to see.
Very well, then.
That was very subconscious.
Where is your face?
All that there is, you see.
You're just a skull, like death.
I can breathe.
But through holes.
I can eat and talk.
But your mouth is just a slit, no lips, and no flesh, like your face was eaten away.
It was eaten away.
It was how?
You really want to know?
I can't stand it.
Psychology session.
Somewhere
with the
in
devil.
Desert country. The bandit had a sense of the grotesque. He didn't like my face, he said.
You want a face for me?
Yes.
But a wax face, what good would
you? You're not... You're only to comply, not to judge. You will rebuild my face.
And not make me feel bad.
You will
bad.
Model a nose, lips, and a chin.
But out of wax, it's crazy. Better a surgeon. Surgery's done.
I want a wax face.
Get off my back.
Tempered as firmly and durably as those dummies. But handsomer. I want to be handsome. In fact, as handsome as you.
Well, the devil's got a lot of problems. I find this hilarious. Tony ends up making this guy feel pretty defensive and uncomfortable and in the end jealous. He's like, oh, you don't have a face. Well, I can breathe. Wow. Devil ends up having to tell Tony to lay off him because he's making him feel bad. Tony's one tough customer, even for the devil. So the devil admits that he finds Tony attractive and says, make me a face that looks just like yours. Let's ping on that for later. Yes, of course, that will come up in the plot. Tony goes on to ask him more questions and accuse him of being the missing wax devil until again, you know, the guy becomes very irritated and impatient with Tony and tells him to just freaking make the face. So Tony narrates making a wax face like his own, and the devil loves it. He's a happy customer, and he asks, will it last? And Tony says, yeah, as long as you stay where it's cool so it doesn't melt. So he says he's going to move in with Tony and live in the refrigerator unit and make him rich, because not only haven't I a face, the devil says, I haven't a conscience either. So what do you think will happen with a devil with Tony's face and no conscience? Let's find out.
He was going to steal for me, he said. But he began by stealing from me. Tina. I'd had a date with her, but she hadn't shown up. I'd waited half the night, but she never came. The next day, when she dropped into the workshop, I lammed into her. What changed your mind?
Changed my mind?
We had a date last night. I waited for you. You didn't show up.
I didn't show... Tony, you're insane. We kept our date.
We what?
We kept our date. And we had fun for the first time in weeks. We had fun. I even fell in love with you all over again.
What did we do?
You don't remember?
Typical man.
Tony, what's the matter with you?
Never mind. What did we do?
Well, there was an open-air movie and a drive into the country. We sang and joked and parked in Lover's Lane.
Oh, my God.
Tony, what is it? What's come over you?
You were out last night, all right, Tina, but not with me. You were out joyriding with the devil.
Oh, man, you were out joyriding with the devil. I find it hilarious that the devil is so cut right here. What does the devil do when he takes human form and is with a woman out for the night? He goes to the drive-ins, and then they go sing songs together, and then they park. Did the devil get to third base? It's pretty remarkable. I guess the devil's starting out slow. You know, he's not used to having a face. He's got to work his way into it. But you see the horrible way that Tony, you know, accosts her when he thinks that she didn't show up for the date. You know, this kind of instant violence was just so taken for granted and so commonplace in these shows. Like, that's normal, that if a woman didn't show up for a date, you lay into her. And of course, as I said, he's going to beat her up later. So I'm laughing at the lameness of the devil, but I am not laughing at the violence with Tony. Suffice to say, after that first date, the devil and Tina keep going out. They start going steady. And even when Tina finds out it's just somebody with Tony's face, she, as Tony puts it, she still preferred him to me. I'm sure that even the devil was more fun than Tony. And the devil probably didn't beat her up. Tony does yell at her, quit dating that freak, which again is funny. And then he tries to beat it out of her, which I'm not even going to play, you know. So is it any wonder that maybe Tina enjoys dating the devil? Either he's nicer to her than Tony is, or she's just used to it. She's used to the bad treatment from dating a human man.
Face is a dollar's worth of wax. Light a match to it, it'll melt away.
He told me how that happened. The terrible way he was mutilated. I cried, Tony. I wasn't repelled. I just cried for him.
You went for a gag. He invented that horror story about his face.
And if he did invent it.
He did invent it. It doesn't make any difference to him.
Nothing makes any difference to me.
Not even if he's the devil.
Not even then. All these days you've been telling me he's the devil. a thing with a false face and no conscience. And while you've been telling me all that, do you know what I keep thinking, Tony? What I keep whispering to myself?
What do you keep thinking?
How exciting. How exciting to be in league and in love with the devil.
I just have to break in with a shout out for that great line. It sounds like a Motown song. I'm in love and in league with the devil. She said that line, and we have to just take a moment to appreciate it.
As Tully.
Laughed as if she was having a fit. Moving away from the deeper into the workshop, losing herself in a crowd of wax figures, hatchetmen, and crazy killers. I followed her with my eyes as far as I could, and suddenly I saw her as someone else. She wasn't Tina any longer, but Mary. Bloody Mary. Tina! Tina, come back! Tina, don't go! She was down the stairs, gone, running from me. I went back into the workshop. I had to get hold of myself. I was seeing things.
You seem a little unsettled, Tony.
You?
Yes, me. You handled Tina very clumsily.
What were you spying?
I couldn't help overhearing you. I was there in your refrigerator room.
That's a classic line. So the devil makes it clear that he's moving in on Tony's gal and says that he, the devil, is more her kind. And Tony won't believe it. He says, it's just talk. It's just talk to make me crazy for the pushing around I give her. So the devil lays out the deal with Tony. He's been so busy moving in on Tina that he's forgotten about the part where he's going to make Tony rich.
The devil had promised to reward me by making me rich. He hadn't forgotten.
For you, Tony. A small down payment on my gratitude for this face. A man's wedding band. It's not much, but the wretch had little worth stealing. Only a watch, a few paltry dollars, and this ring. The money goes to Tina. I will keep the watch.
Gee, Minnie, is this the best the devil can do? Penny Annie shakedowns on the docks and in the park? He's like sneaking around, beating up bums, and then he has to split the take three ways? He's the devil. Why does he have to hide? Can't he stride right onto the floor of the New York Stock Exchange or into a big, wealthy ballroom and just do whatever he wants? This devil's really sweating it out, going to Tony with a thin envelope and excuses and promising to do better. Plus, we've learned that he's still jealous of Tony, and he's worried Tony's going to take Tina from him. I mean, he really needs his woman at this tough time in his life. And so he asks Tina to marry him so that Tony can't win her back. This is a pretty beat-down devil. It's a rough start for him in his reentry into the world with a face.
Tina.
Yes?
I never want to lose you to Tony.
I don't think you ever will.
Will you marry me then, right away?
Tina, no.
So romantic.
Whatever you've done, but not that, you can't marry the devil.
But I can, Tony, I can. And I will.
Tina did, and I watched.
And do you, Tina, take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband?
Who is doing the ceremony?
Please place the ring on her finger.
Ring? I forgot about the ring. Tony said...
He didn't have the money to buy one.
The wedding band you acquired earlier. May I borrow it for the bride? Yes, I have it here in my pocket. It was a beautiful ceremony. You don't think so, Tony?
It was a nightmare.
You're bad company for honeymooners. Drop us in the nearest motor court and then be on your way.
Wow. Again, it's pretty surprising. So the devil is honeymooning in a motel on the highway, and he has to have his friend drive him. I would expect more if I were marrying the devil. I would expect a lot fancier setup than this. All right, well, Tina's happy, so I guess we are happy. Tony drives off, steaming, but then he decides he has to go back and end it all. So he sneaks back in. He's able to pin the devil down and start melting his face off. And the devil has to call for Tina to try to help him, but it's too late. Tony sets the devil on fire and the room on fire, and Mr. and Mrs. Devil both die on their honeymoon in the motel. It's so uninteresting, I don't even play it for you. So Tony is shaken, and he feels that he must confess, and he goes to the police to tell them that he is responsible for the death of Tina. I guess not of the devil. I think you'd be a hero if you were responsible for the death of the devil. But here comes the, you know, it's hard to believe, but the worst has not yet come for this episode. Let's listen.
I'm back in the devil's workshop now, winding everything up, making plans to junk everything here for keeps. Sergeant Tracy is here with me, trying to make sense out of what he checked of my story. I had a whole group of specialists go through the rubble of that cabin that burned to the ground. I started the fire. I destroyed his face and Tina Ford with me.
Yeah, no, you told us that already. There weren't two corpses in the rubble, Tony. Just a lot of wax. Wax over everything.
The devil?
Was undoubtedly that wax figure you reported missing.
What?
But Tina...
We're checking over your workshop just now. I find another figure in your inventory missing.
Another figure?
Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary is missing.
See for yourself. I didn't know exactly what you did the other night in acting out your hallucination, but there's no doubt in my mind that the two people who were burned in that fire was a wax devil and a Bloody Mary.
Okay.
A man was axed to death and robbed in the park on the East End, you said. That murder never took place, Tony.
What?
I'm as crazy as that.
Well, let's just say you took that weird business you're in a little seriously.
This guy's very understanding.
Yeah, it just about explains everything, more or less. Does it?
Or does it?
Don't give me this.
One big question mark we're trying to slough off at the department, because if we don't, we'll all start looking under our beds tonight.
One big question, Sergeant.
We went through the rubble of that cabin with a fine comb.
This better be good.
All we found, as I said, was wax and this.
This?
This?
A wedding band. A man's wedding band.
Okay, let's see if I have this straight. So there were no bodies, so it was all a hallucination. Okay, maybe we could trust them that much if this had been a good episode. Tony's just crazy, but then that's not horror, is it? And then they're taking it even a step further to say there wasn't even some bum rolled in the park where the devil supposedly got the wedding band from. So they are erasing the entire story. And you're thinking, well, why are they doing that? Am I just supposed to be horrified that Tony is crazy and that's supposed to be enough? And then they do something that we hate a lot, which is we're going to either write a weak script or we're going to erase everything that we set up in the script. But then, for some reason, at the last minute, we are going to offer one scant piece of evidence that says, oh, maybe this did happen. There's a wedding ring in the room. Well, it is a cheap hotel room. Someone could have lost a ring in the room before. I don't even know. You're left trying to like pick up these very boring, shabby pieces of a story when you don't even care anymore. Oh, Inner Sanctum, this story sucked. All we have left to do now is bear up and listen to Raymond's outro.
I hear there's a sign outside a certain workshop that reads, "For sale, owner gone off permanently." You can find cheap anybody. A small down payment. A wax dollar, say.
What?
With your mind as security for the balance of your sanity. So the blazing lover's triangle finally boiled down to just Tony. Imagine all that wax and no candle wick.
Yeah,
and a close friend of mine remarked to his keeper, make a rental service out of your face and you're liable to get it in the neck.
Yeah, well, I think we all got it in the neck with that episode. The Devil's Workshop, where actually nothing happened and everything happened and there was no devil, and Tina was actually, there was no Tina because she was actually the Bloody Mary statue, yet that wasn't true either. I don't even know. You know, you could rewrite this to be good. You know, what if the devil had originally, someone else had owned the shop and the devil had taken over that person to become alive. And then when he saw Tony come in with Tina and start running the shop, he wanted to do something diabolical. And so he turned Tina, like took her body and gave her to Bloody Mary or something, anything, something that could have been better than this. In the end, the title Devil's Workshop is pretty apt because this devil seems like a guy who's going to end up kind of failing at crime and taking some minimum wage job in Brooklyn somewhere, and Tina, you know, hassles him every night for not making enough money. I don't know, not very compelling. Look, horror radio is a mixed bag. And when you have a bad episode like this, it just sharpens your appreciation for the good episodes. Let's think of it that way. Let's silver lining this thing. That's what you have to do. Hopefully, we'll have better luck next time. Now, it's ironic that I'm about to give my usual sign-off where I say that your ghost of radio is about to go out the creaking door. Of course, the creaking door is the signature intro of Inner Sanctum, and Raymond mentions it, you know, fairly frequently that he's going in or out of the creaking door. Let's just say that every time I do it, I am making amends in the eternal penitence that Raymond has to do for these bad episodes. So I am your ghost of radio, your ghost, and I am going out the creaking door, and I will see you next time when I hope that everyone is happy. See you then.